Welcome. You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Marcellero. And this week, my guest is Architash founder, Anthony Frausto-Robledo. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You are a practicing architect, and you've been so for 18 years with an architectural firm in the Boston area. And you're also the founder, publisher, and editor-in-chief of the Architash website. And I became aware of you back when I was doing science, public relations and promotion at Apple. And you were one of the heroes because we were in an era around 2000 when it was this new operating system from Apple with Unix. And these Macs were starting to nibble on the edges of the workstations that were in place. And we loved you because you were a strong supporter of architecture on the Mac, which is exactly what we were trying to do. So that was cool.
It was. It was a very cool time. Very exciting time for me personally.
I want to talk to you about the history of architecture and architecture tools in general and also on the Mac. But before we get into that, I wanted to ask you about how you got into architecture yourself. You know, I got into astronomy because, you know, you had the stars to gaze at and there was the whole universe to inspire you. I was meaning to ask you, how does one get inspired to get into architecture? Is it looking at buildings and saying, I want to do that too? How does that happen?
God, that's a great question. I think it happens differently for everyone. For me personally, I have an early memory of making a book in first grade, and I think on one of the first pages of this book, I drew my house, and I drew it so well that the teacher said to me, you should be an architect when you grow up. And that's my first memory of that word, architect. Mm. And I loved coloring as a child and was good at art. And I was encouraged by my grandmother, actually. And at middle school age, I started to look at blueprints. My grandparents were building, I think, their third house, and they had an architect design it. And that was probably the first time I got to look at blueprints.
Have you ever seen Mr. Blanding's Dream House with Cary Grant?
I don't think so.
That's a great movie. It's a great old movie where Cary Grant is a businessman, and he tries to get a new house built. Anyway, that's just a subroutine. We turned from subroutine. We're done.
Okay. Yes.
Go ahead.
Anyway, I used to just pore over these plans with, you know, my young eyes, and I started to ask my parents to get me T-squares and triangles, and I started drafting. Yeah. And that was really the beginning. And through high school, I took all the architectural CAD drafting classes I was allowed to take as an elective, which was, I think, 3 years worth.
So that was the state of the art of architecture, a T-square and a triangle.
Absolutely. Well, the real state of the art in the early 80s was a Mayline parallel rule, which was fantastic. And I had my first one before I graduated high school. So it was, you know, I felt like I was on the cutting edge.
Was there any use for a slide rule in architecture, or was that too
myth? No, I think that's more a myth. I think that's, yeah, I've never had one myself and rarely worked with anyone who had one. But, you know, I was very fortunate in high school. I got a job after school as kind of a gopher in an architecture firm, one of the best practices in Santa Barbara where I grew up. And they actually had these little computers around. And they were Apples, and they weren't Macs. It was before the Mac. And I was so drawn to them, and I actually interfaced with them very briefly. I helped the secretary a couple times. She used to do the typing for the specifications, and she'd do a lot of that. And I'd actually typed on one. But at that time, I was not interested in computers at all. I was interested in being an architect, but had no sense of the importance of computers at that time.
So there wasn't really any architectural apps on the Apple II, but it sort of introduced you to computers.
Yes, and I was captivated by the little machines and their beauty, but that was about it. So I only had this link to beauty, but my mind was focused on becoming an architect.
So did you have to get certified? Is there a licensing process that you go through? How does that happen? Do you get your bachelor's degree and then do you take a test? Or how does that process work?
yeah, you go and get your 5-year Bachelor of Architecture degree. It's not a bachelor's with a major in architecture. It's actually a Bachelor of Architecture. And that's one path, and that's a 5-year path. And then the other common path is to have a kind of unrelated or semi-related degree, and then have a 3-year Master's of Architecture. And both of those paths can set you up to take the licensing exam, which is a state exam.
Every state has its own exam, so it's like being a lawyer. You can only practice in the state you test in.
That's right. And of course, there's reciprocity between the states and also between countries now, so that if you are licensed in one state and you get a job in another, you can apply for a quick license. You just have to pay a fee and do some paperwork, and then you're licensed in that state.
So when did you start working for an architecture firm?
Well, I was in high school, actually. That was my first taste of being inside of an architecture firm.
That must have been exciting.
Yeah, it was very exciting. I actually got to draw a little bit, too, at the end of that little 10 years I was there until I graduated from high school. But I quickly ended up in architecture firms not long after high school, and actually worked as a draftsman for a few years before I went to architecture school in Boston.
Is that hard to get into? Is there a demand? Was there a demand then, and is there a demand now for architectures, where if you get a degree and you pass your test, that they just scoop you up, or is there an overage?
Well, I don't have a good sense of what the demand was back when I was, 20 years old. I didn't have a hard time getting a job. I think it was because I was very, very, probably overly serious for my age. And that captivated, I think, people who hired me. I wasn't a normal 20-year-old. I was just very, very focused. And somewhere along the way, I became more normal. But it was probably with architecture school and realizing that, hey, you can be a young, fun 20-something, enjoy life, and study at the same time. So, it was a long haul process. I came to Boston Architectural College, which is a school famous for kind of its combination of academics mixed with kind of an internship that's almost full time concurrent with the degree program itself. And so you get credit for your work in an office, and but you still do more or less the same course load as everyone else. It's a long haul, but it's a very fulfilling program.
It's an interesting story you tell about the psychology of your life in undergraduate school and technical area. I remember in high school, like Bill Nye talks about in his book All at Once, we carried slide rules around, and there was those of us in high school who had a little black book at first of logs in our pocket, and then we carried slide rules on our waist, and it was a badge of honor if you walked around with a slide rule hanging from your waist. You were sort of marked, as the nerd guy. And it was uncomfortable in some ways because you were perhaps outside some social circles maybe you wanted to be in. But then Star Trek came along and Mr. Spock made it all legit. And we went, oh, wow, we can be that, and it's glorious.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think the big badge of honor in architecture school is that you are in your studios working through all hours of the night, which is where that kind of culture of and kind of legacy of very, very hardworking architects comes from that kind of anti-business thinking about practice. And that's probably one of the pet peeves I have about architectural practice now in the whole industry, is that while that culture is so exciting when you're in school burning the midnight oil, what it does for you is it takes your mind off the more mature realities of what it's like to be a practicing architect and one day maybe being a principal or owning your own firm and having real responsibilities about paying bills. And so my evolution kind of came from from being just very disinterested, almost, I love that first Apple machine for its beauty, but didn't see the point of it from the perspective of business. Well, I was a young person then, and that kind of makes sense. But through my transition in architecture school and coming out of it and getting into the real world, I slowly came around to this realization that Well, it's very fun working really hard into the night. At the end of the day, you do age and you get tired and you realize that there's a lost opportunity, and somehow the working methods of the discipline need to be exactly that, more disciplined.
Interesting. Do architects work like doctors and lawyers, where they can go into private practice and be a one-man company? Or do architects generally always work for a larger firm?
No, actually, most architects work in small firms. About 80% of all practices are, I believe, under 10 people or under 15. It's the designation that the American Institute of Architects has for small firm. There's small firm, mid-sized firms, large firms, and then enterprise firms.
Does the size of your firm dictate the scope of what kind of projects you can tackle?
I think for a long, long time, the size of firms did do just that. Thanks to computerized technology and programs like CAD and BIM, it's now possible to do very large projects with a much smaller team. It's sort of like what Steve Jobs used to say, that he just needed 25 people to change the world. Well, 25 people is more than enough to change the world in architecture. Now, I heard somewhere along the lines that there were hundreds of people working at Foster and Partners practice when they were designing the Apple campus. And that makes sense. That's an extraordinary building that's incredibly complicated and probably for the most demanding client in the world. So that makes sense. But no, small practices are very capable of doing larger and larger work as time goes on, thanks to technology.
When one thinks of architecture, especially me, I think of the physical design of the building. But in fact, you have to take care of the entire design, is that not right? In terms of power supply and plumbing and heating and cooling and the solar effects and all that, right? So you have to do sun models and figure out what the sunlight and the angles are going to be and what the heat load on the building is going to be and stuff like that, right?
That's true, but we're more the quarterbacks of the engineering disciplines that help do that work. There's mechanical engineers that take care of all of the mechanical services like your AC and your heating, mm-hmm. and plumbing engineers for all the plumbing and fire protection engineers for the sprinkler and fire protection system and so on. And you have, of course, your structural engineers, your civil engineers, your geotech. So it's a body, it's a small body of professionals that are working in a federated way who come together to develop the documentation that gets a real building projects up out of the ground. And what architects kind of tend to think of themselves as the quarterback of that process. And very much we are the people who synthesize the work.
Has there been a big change in the architectural thinking based on the design of materials and understanding how to do low-E windows and or orientation of the building and window design and shadowing and shading and things like that, that changes the ecology and the electrical demand on the building? Has there been a lot of change in that lately? I'm just curious.
Oh yeah, there's been tremendous change in the last decade. And I would say that the change is accelerating, and I think the industry is trying to catch up. The truth of the matter is there's almost too much expertise and specialization that's being placed on the shoulders, that the generalist shoulders of the architect. And so best firms in the world now have building scientists and dedicated professionals. So they're more like a hospital, right? In a hospital, you have your general practitioners and you have your specialist practitioners, your surgeons and so forth. And I think the largest firms in the world, like the one that did the Apple campus, they have an army of specialists, and one only needs to look at the job openings at places like Foster and Partners and the largest firms in the world, and you could see what I'm talking about. Yes, it's getting demanding for all architects in general that way. And it may lead to changes in how architects are educated.
Interesting. More technical, more physics involved maybe than before. Yeah, cool. Well, it's time for a break. When we come back in the second half, I want to ask you about the evolution of architecture design tools on computers and Apple's role in that. and talk about your new iMac Pro too. Glorious. But first, we have to take a break, folks. We'll be back in 60 seconds. Stay with us. I'm chatting with Anthony Frausto-Robledo.
Hello there, all you fabulous background mode listeners. I'm Kelly Gamont with the Mac Observer, and I just want to say a few words about how you can support all the things we do. If you're thinking about buying something from Apple, Amazon, or Mac Mall, just go to the Mac Observer's homepage where we have a section called Support TMO. Or you can just enter macobserver.com/Apple Store, all one word, and that will take you to our special page for Apple and our other affiliates. If you make a purchase from one of our partners this way, the Mac Observer receives a small compensation for sending business their direction. Pretty cool, right? And you don't pay a penny more. This small fee from our affiliates helps us continue to bring you TMO's daily news, reviews, tips, how-tos, and podcasts like this one. So the next time you're thinking about an online purchase, come to TMO's homepage and support the Mac Observer. Thanks. Back to you, John.
Thank you, Kelly. We're back. Anthony, I want to ask you about the evolution of architectural tools on computers. My guess is that they first appeared on powerful Sun workstations and then migrated over to Windows and Mac as time went on. Is that correct?
I think that's maybe partly correct in the sense that a lot of the core technologies that were behind CAD were developed in academia on some of those types of platforms. But if we go back to the early mid-80s, we can find the evolution of popular tools like Graphisoft's ArchiCAD, which actually started on the Lisa and then quickly went to the Mac. Equally, we can look at the kind of PC side of the world and talk about tools like VersaCAD and AutoCAD, of course. So I think that CAD technology, as it was being developed from its origins through the 70s into the early 80s, there was a lot of use on powerful workstations. I was talking to a firm recently about that story in their own practice. And they were very much engaged in early CAD and 3D, and they were definitely doing some of that work on powerful workstation class machines. But I would say I would characterize that for the bulk of the practicing world of architecture, firms got involved on the personal computer. That's when it started.
What was the first Macintosh that really lit up the boards when it came to architectural tools? Was it the Mac 2 with its color display and some real horsepower and the ability to attach your own display? So when did that all start?
I think that was definitely one of the core machines that got people's attention. I also think that when the Quadro machines came out, that was another big moment. The evolution of the PowerPC architecture got a lot of the community on the Mac side, at least, very excited about the prospect of using these new wonderful software tools to practice. But yes, I think that machine is actually one of the key machines that got people excited.
So for a long time, because of the graphics advances in the Macintosh world, it became a favored machine for architectural tools. But then the lines kind of blurred later on as Windows came along and got better and stronger, especially Windows successors, Windows 95 and the successors, and especially Windows NT. Then we started getting some serious graphical capability in Windows and hardware. And as I recall, there was a time when there was some difficulty convincing these companies that the Mac was still the preferred platform. Do I remember right?
Yeah, I think when Apple started going through its crisis phase, starting in the mid-90s with the arrival of Windows 95. The emergence of NT certainly put a dent on Apple as well. So in terms of competitiveness, there were definitely very powerful tools. Stratus line of Strata 3D software, for example, was a tool that I encountered in the early 90s in practice before I was even out of school. Some big firms in Boston were doing some amazing things with that tool on the Mac. But they were also running that alongside fleets of PCs running early versions of AutoCAD. So I would say even in the early 90s, you can characterize that the Mac was, despite having some notable early entrants that were that had leadership. The Mac, even in the 90s, was already kind of behind. And that led me, that's one of the reasons that got me involved in Archytops was...
That was my next question, by the way.
Yeah.
So, good timing.
Yeah, so, you know, the whole mission behind Archytosh, well, officially the mission reads that, you know, we're trying to empower readers with leading edge information on CAD and BIM and 3D technologies on Apple's platforms. But the core of the mission in the very beginning was simply to try to save the Mac in the architecture world. And the way the story goes is that I created a website that simply listed all available tools, 3D and CAD and related, on the early Archytosh site. And I shared that with Guy Kawasaki's evangelist list. And that's how it spread.
Do you think that Archytosh played a role in helping to evangelize in such a way that the community put pressure on the developers? And they realized they had a market there that they maybe were overlooking? I'm just surmising.
I hope so. I know that Archytosh has played a key role in getting developers' attention on the Macintosh. I know from talking to even the early stories with the formation of SketchUp, for example, the site was definitely on the radar of a lot of developers who weren't on the platform yet, and it was definitely used as a resource. For years, Archytosh actually was listed among just a few publications in Apple's developer website as a market research resource. And I think we got that badge of honor because we had so much information on the community. We were the voice of the Mac community in architecture and AEC in general. And yes, so I think the answer is a yes.
You know, apple.com/science went away about 5 years ago, and there's been some dismay in the science and engineering community about Apple's visible support of science and the Unix platform, and it's been all iPhone and Animojis and some other lighthearted things that seems to have distracted Apple from its engineering focus. And that has left the door open for Hewlett-Packard and for Microsoft. How do you feel in 2017/18 about Apple's support of architecture? Yeah. Is Apple back on the bandwagon, or is the community still lamenting Apple's lack of focus there?
I think the community is missing Apple's presence and focus there. I like the science page that you refer to. They had an architecture page, and Archytosh was one of just a couple external resources on that page. Mm-hmm. It was great to be on that page. It drew a lot of traffic to us. But, you know, we were out here carrying the flag for the platform for a long time. And, that was the one kind of thing that Apple did that was beneficial to Archytosh. And I think the way Apple thinks about it now is that they're much more consumer-oriented company, and that while their pro users are very important to them, I think on some level they're taking their pro base for taking them for granted, and trusting that they will stick through because the company's big now and there's no need to fear that it's going to go away, which was the problem in around 2000. There was the question: is Apple going to make it or not?
Do you think the iMac Pro is Apple's sort of line in the sand and punctuation of the fact that, hey, we're back for the tech professionals? Because, you know, in the fall of 2017, Apple took a lot of heat from Hewlett-Packard and Microsoft and the Surface Studio and the high-powered Hewlett-Packard workstations, and they were making a lot of hay. And I was involved in it. There was a tremendous amount of discussion about how these two companies were moving in on the engineering and creative professionals. And then we got the Apple waking up and coming out with the iMac Pro, which you have. I want to talk to you about that. So do you think that Apple's saying, well, let's create great hardware, and then the developers will come back to us?
I do. I actually think this is a fantastic machine. I think it's a fantastic statement. I've followed all of Apple's buzz and commentary on their commitment to the Mac professional. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's a good line in the sand. It's not the answer. It's one part of the answer.
What do you think of your iMac Pro? Tell me about it.
Well, I haven't really, honestly, I haven't fired it up yet. As I said, it arrived and I haven't started really even testing it yet.
Oh, how can you stand it?
It's been hard. It's been hard with this. Pressing matters with Architosh. So it's hard to actually to just wait and look at it in the box.
One of the things I think about when my writing and when I think about the iMac Pro is I say, well, that's a great first start. But Apple also has to recognize that there are science and engineering and creative professionals who want to attach their own displays. And so the iMac that Apple promised us looks to be an important supplement to the iMac Pro. What do you think about the Mac Pro for 2018? Do you have any thoughts about what Apple might be thinking and planning?
I have a few thoughts. I think that that machine's going to be important for other markets than the markets that Apple has been traditionally known for. I think it will be a machine that is possibly going to be geared up for work with artificial intelligence, development of AI apps and machine learning and maybe even blockchain, those types of activities. So I really don't like to speculate too much about what Apple may do next in a public way. But we, you know, Architosh has definitely had its share of sticking something out there as a target that we're hoping for. We did that actually with breaking the jobs in quadrant. Should Apple make an iMac Pro, which was the article we published, I believe in 2014. And that article came out of our research where we asked our readers, what do you want in a professional workstation machine? And from the from that data, we learned very clearly that there was absolutely a need for a professional machine, workstation class machine that was an all-in-one. So I think we have that machine now. I think that it is perhaps slightly overpriced and missing the mark a bit. I wish it was.
How?
Well, I think, from the research that we have, there's a great number of architects in firms that have been using the regular iMac, generally fully kitted out, as their main workstation. And it's more than adequate for a lot of tools. But the one thing that I know architects have been claiming is missing from the iMac isn't the processor. It's about workstation class graphics. So we had that in the new Mac Pro from 2013, but that machine was going to be ill-fated for a lot of reasons we don't need to talk about now. But I think that the problem stems from that quadrant philosophy that came from Jobs. And I think that was a philosophy that made sense at that time. But in the present, especially with Apple's scale capacities, I think that they are more than capable of building machines across a spectrum of performance. And I think that will better serve the market because you will find architects and other similar professionals in similar roles and in similar size companies and workflows may have particular requirements for budgetary reasons in terms of what they want to spend for machines. So having more latitude in price points across performance, I think, is very important.
Is a 27-inch display on an iMac or an iMac Pro sufficient for most architects, or are they hungry for a second display that's bigger, or are they hungry for a Mac Pro where they can attach a 40-inch OLED display or something like that? I mean, is 27 inches sufficient for the kind of work you do generally?
It is, but the firms that I tend to pop in out of in visiting other friends in practice, I see more and more double displays, and having two 24s or two 27s seems to be the sweet spot. doesn't take up too much real estate. You need a lot of real estate as an architect generally for having drawings around and stuff like that. Yeah. But having two displays is really important because you want to have your CAD or BIM on one side and you want to have something else on the other side. If you're a more senior level person, you probably want to have project management applications open. If you're a 3D specialist person, you might have post-processing open on one side, like the Adobe Suite, and your 3D application on the other side. Two monitors is really what you need to practice effectively.
Okay, so we're about out of time. I just have another question for you before we wrap up.
Sure.
Are there any major developers of CAD and architecture software that are still having heartburn coming over to Apple because of developer tools or their feelings about the market prospects or Apple's commitment? Or are all the major makers of these tools on board on the Apple?
All the developers I talk to, from Autodesk to Graphisoft to the Vectorworks folks, the FormZ folks, all the big names that we know of, they're all very enthusiastic about Apple. They're also very enthusiastic about Apple's mobile platform and prospects for bringing more and more applications to the web, thanks to HTML5 and WebGL and progress in those areas. So I have not heard anything lately. It's been years and years and years since I've heard anything negative about tools development and Apple support. I think developers are overwhelmingly feeling positive about where Apple is.
Cool. Well, is there anything you wanted to chat about that I forgot to ask you?
Oh, the only thing I will say about the new modular Mac Pro that we're supposed to get is that I hope Apple delivers a truly modular Mac Pro in the sense that its main feature from the point of view of what's fantastic about it is that they've solved the modular part in some kind of beautiful way, working with common types of elements that we would put in a machine, common GPU boards and hard drives and so forth. So it makes the best use of what's already out there, but packages it up in a way that's quite elegant and Apple-like. That's what I'm hoping for with that machine.
Yeah, because sometimes Apple tends to be sort of close to the vest and proprietary and say, we're going to test these particular configurations with Mac OS and we're not going to go, you know, completely open because that's just too many things to deal with. So yeah, right. That's an interesting trade-off.
It's a very difficult trade-off for them. I think that they went too far in the other direction with the 2013 Mac Pro because it's a beautiful concept. It's like something like a concept car. It's remarkable in so many ways. It really is. But right away, we heard a lot of backlash on that machine when it came out, and it just wasn't flexible enough and open enough. So I think that I'm hopeful that that lesson has been learned.
Excellent. We're going to have to wrap it up. This has been an excellent discussion, not just for architects out there, but anybody who's interested in where Apple's going in the community and how they're supporting the engineering and architecture community. So thanks for your awesome insights and helping us understand what's going on in the community. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Tell the listeners how they can contact you if they wish.
You can find Architosh on Twitter at Architosh.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Anthony. It's been a great show. And folks, we hope you enjoyed this discussion and tour into architecture and Apple. We'll be back next week with the Mac Observer's Background Mode.